Third hour of 3D on this Monday afternoon, a little rainy Monday afternoon here in Middle Tennessee. Don't forget to go out to Clyde's on Church Street tonight for 102.5's official national championship watch party. Half off their signature smoked wings, $14 buckets of Miller Lite, Miller High Life, Coors Light, and Coors Banquet? Not up on that.
What's that? That's the original.
Okay.
I think. Coors, the banquet beer.
I am not up to speed, I guess, on my beers lately. Located at 1700 Church Street, of course, here in Nashville. Jared and the GM will be broadcasting there live today from 2 until 6 p.m. Don't forget, this will be your place to listen to it. 102.5 The Game will carry the ESPN feed for Alabama and Georgia this evening down in Atlanta. We will go down to Atlanta next hour. In 94.9 Game 2, will carry Eli Gold and the Alabama feed as I get choked up.
You all right, Sean?
Vince Ferrara from WNML in Knoxville joins us. Vince, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How was your weekend?
Well, they will get some of their coaches after tonight's game. Intact, in Knoxville, ready to go, no matter what happens.
Yeah, either way, somebody's coming back with this year's national championship, whether it's Kevin Shearer on the Georgia side or Jeremy Pruitt, of course, who's been much more discussed, the new head coach as DC at Alabama. So one way or the other, I think it'll come out good, and it'll help them in recruiting down the stretch. It's interesting, Philip Fulmer did a, you guys may have seen it, a halftime interview at or during the broadcast of the Tennessee-Kentucky game, and he did an interview and said, we'd love to have him here. There's some good and some bad, but you know, I think it's good, and looking forward to. He said, "I hope they tie." So, I don't think that's happening. If that does, then a whole lot of people are going to be mad. But no, I think it's much more good. I don't think it's 50-50. I think it's much more positive for Tennessee, regardless of how the game ends up. To have those guys involved in that game, I think it's definitely a positive for Tennessee that will continue beyond. Just during this period where they've had duties.
Well, we'll come back to the football side. Obviously, they're getting some commits. We'll get into all that stuff here in just a bit. But because it was their second sellout of the year, they sold out the Sunday afternoon game against North Carolina, sold out Saturday night hosting Kentucky, and things, they kind of took over in the second half. That's a good win for the Vols. And ironically, if you didn't see, we had it in pick six on Friday. The Vols were the favorite in that game against Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a little bit surprising. Tennessee has had some recent success over Kentucky. They've won their last two better Kentucky teams, I think, and not as good Tennessee teams. So maybe you thought, well, if Tennessee's better and Kentucky's not as good, Tennessee should win again. But it was easy to be influenced off of the last Auburn game, but prior to Kentucky, for Tennessee, the way they played. And frankly, I didn't think they played that great, or that's been the first half against Kentucky either. The key is that they were able to stay within striking distance and then go on the run early in the second half. So apparently Ron Slay, who's, of course, a former Tennessee basketball player, he does an hour weekly on our morning show. He got in Grant Williams' face at halftime and went chest-to-chest and said, basically told him, according to Grant Williams, that you need to pick it up and you need to make what's been a terrible game into a great game. And he said it helped him. He said, Grant Williams said there's nothing really that he could translate that was clean enough to be used with the media. But it was motivating, and unfortunately, Grant Williams, as skilled a player as he is, as smart of a kid as he is in the classroom, as nice of a kid as he is, he unfortunately doesn't bring it at the highest level at all times. So Rick Barnes and the staff, during games and in practices, I've seen it. Unfortunately, he's got to be motivated. You got to stay on him, or else it kind of lets off a little bit. And that's the way Tennessee has done. But it just shows when they reverse roles, when they're a little bit more desperate after falling behind, you see what they can do, as opposed to all their previous losses, they had double-digit leads. So I don't know if this is a better formula or what, but they got it together, and they had a lot of role players help them out in the game, like John Fulkerson and Lamonte Turner. So it definitely was a very good win for the basketball team.
We know Rick Barnes from his body of work, long time in Austin, Texas, with the Longhorns. And, you know, to see guys like Kevin Durant file through, that LaMarcus Aldridge, T.J. Ford, we can go down the list. I mean, he had a lot of NBA players come play there for him in Austin, Texas. Haven't seen that really in Knoxville yet, and he's been there now. I mean, this is not his first year. So Rick Barnes has now established himself as UT's head coach. I know they had some big recruits in there on Saturday. Are people talking about that? You know, when is UT going to get into? Because right now, sitting here in Nashville, I mean, that is the talk around Bryce Drew. I mean, the recruiting class that he's landing, and who knows, one more piece. And Vanderbilt's going to be up there next season. They're going to talk about this class right there with Kentucky and Kansas and North Carolina and Duke. Why hasn't that translated for Rick Barnes yet?
Well, let that happen and see if Tennessee fans don't take notice, because they absolutely will. I'm sure many of them have already taken notice that you're taking steps in that direction, that Bryce Drew has gone in that direction. So, you know, Rick Barnes, one of his biggest criticisms has been, hey, when are we going to get five stars in this place? When is that going to start to happen? He's had classes since the 2015 class, so he's had three already. And the plan was to lay the foundation with four-year guys that would develop and be the base and then build around it. And to this point, the highest recruit that they've brought in is Yves Pons from France. He's a four-star prospect, top 100 type of guy, but he's still a developmental guy, and he wasn't healthy to start the year. Now he just hadn't been able to get into the rotation. He's still probably trying to develop as a basketball player, in addition to getting healthy and being behind other guys. So that hasn't paid off for him. I think they do need a couple to take that next step to really compete for championships. I do think they need to get at least one elite player, if not a couple of high-level players, to go with those four-year foundation guys. Hasn't happened yet. They're in the mix for a lot more guys this year. One of them is Anfernee Simons, who's a former Louisville commit. He decommitted after the whole basketball recruiting scandal happened. He was in town this weekend he's a shooting guard, along with another shooting guard in the 2020 class, Jordan Springer. Also, they had a couple of 2019 guys, a center and a guard, that were in town this weekend. But the highlight was the two five-star guys, Springer and Simon. So they're trying. They're trying more so than I think they did their first few classes. I think they tried a little bit more last year, and it didn't pay off. I think they're in the mix a little bit more this year. Having on-the-court success would definitely help them as well. But, you know, Rick Barnes doesn't kiss people's butt on the recruiting circuit. He's not with the shoe companies. He has good relationships with some of them, but he's not one to get buddy to for the favors and that kind of stuff. I think he's one that plays it straight and does it on pure relationships along with his staff. And so maybe it's taking a little bit longer, but they do need to pay it off in recruiting with at least one elite player at some point soon to take it to that next level.
And they'll be over on West End tomorrow night in Memorial Gym, 8:00, mm-hmm. SEC Network, Tennessee Vanderbilt. How do you see that one playing out?
Well, you know, anytime you go to Vandy, doesn't matter what type of team they have, that gym is awkward, and the fact that they can shoot. And I think, not surprisingly, they've been a little bit more competitive. I think a couple weeks ago Willie said that when we were in studio, that he thought that they would play better, a little bit better, be more competitive in conference. And so I think Tennessee needs to bring it. I wonder about a little bit of a letdown after Kentucky. And either way, it wouldn't surprise me. But this is a game Tennessee should win. Will they win? I don't know. This team is not the easiest to predict from that standpoint.
And Vince, you look back through the last couple of years between these two teams, the road team has done surprisingly well. It's been a series where the road team has done better.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Vanderbilt you can understand because it's so different. And, you know, some of these players that Tennessee will bring have not shot in that gym before. And, you know, some of them have experienced it. You know, another factor for Tennessee is the health of Jordan Bohm. He's been dealing with the flu, barely played in the Kentucky game. I think this will be a game where you need to get out and extend your defense and defend the three for Vanderbilt when they spread the floor on you. I think this would be a game where Tennessee could definitely use Jordan Bohm. And it's discipline, you know, when you're having to defend three-point shooters like that. Tennessee at times has done a decent job on defending on the perimeter, and other times they've just lacked focus and been poor. I think it helped Tennessee that Kentucky didn't shoot the three much and wasn't pretty good on average three-point shooter, but they didn't shoot it very much. So it helped them be able to pack down on Kentucky inside. Tennessee won't have that luxury, I don't think, against Vanderbilt. So it's going to be a different type of game. But you're right, road teams – have been successful. I think this is a better Tennessee team and not as good a Vanderbilt team as we've seen the last couple of years. So not sure if that maybe that'll cancel some, enhance that even more.
It's a good analysis. I am curious to see how Vanderbilt bounces back. I thought that was a road game that they had a shot in at South Carolina. They came up short after beating Alabama. So there'll be a lot of urgency for Vanderbilt to bounce back with a win on their home court. I do think, Darren was mentioning, the recruiting for both these teams, it's still a relatively, would you say, Vince, a pretty young Tennessee team. The most of their team is going to be back next year, and I think Vanderbilt very well could have five new starters next year with the incoming class that they have and a couple of transfers right now that are sitting out. And depending on whether you consider Saban Lee a starter now. He's maybe the one guy that will come back and start again next year. But it'll be a very different looking Vanderbilt team next year. So this is for this senior laden class. This is a huge game against their rivals to try to take Tennessee their last crack at them at Memorial Gym.
Yeah, I think so. And you will see pretty much the same Tennessee team next year. It is a young team. Kentucky is the youngest numerically, the youngest team in the country. I think Tennessee is fifth or sixth. So there's still plenty of guys that have more basketball to play, and a lot of those guys are guys that are going to stick around or not going to bolt early for the NBA. So you'll see largely the same type of team next year. But, you know, Vanderbilt has difference-making freshmen that will start with that class if it plays out that way. Then you can make up ground with high level talent if you have good coaching. You need both, in my opinion. That goes for basketball and for football. It's not just about the players. It's not just about the coaching. You need to coach up elite players, and the football game tonight is a nice example of that. So that's the ingredient. At least if Vanderbilt gets that class next year, then they've got one piece to the puzzle. I think Tennessee has the coaching right now. I think the last piece is one of those elite players.
I think it's going to be a good game tomorrow night, and I think the series between these two teams is going to be really fun to watch the next few years, as I said, with Vanderbilt's class coming in. Now, that's a good segue, though, Vince, to the football game tonight with Jeremy Pruitt leading that Alabama defense. It was clear that it looked like they had a gear that they hadn't had in a while, with the guys getting a little bit healthier than they were, as Nick Saban put it, I guess ferocious was the word he used, and I thought that said it well. I mean, it looked pretty clear that Clemson was not going to have an easy time moving the ball. Everything they got was almost improvised by the quarterback. They were just all over him.
Well, and that just shows that the injuries to Alabama down the stretch were a huge factor. And they got healthy, although they lost one of their key players or one of their linebackers. that has been terrific so far, and so they did have that one injury from the semifinal game. But overall, I think they're still going to be in really good shape for this game. And you know, their front seven got healthy, and I've mentioned it to you guys. They got Minka Fitzpatrick healthy too, so that was another big factor. So when you're handling the scrimmage like they handled against Clemson, I think there's the default that they're going to do that against Georgia. But Georgia's been pretty good on the line of scrimmage as well, and I think Alabama, even with Jalen Hurts not throwing the football the way a lot of people want him to, there's stats about, you know, him only throwing for 131 yards against top 20 defenses and 55% completion percentage. And, you know, you can have all those stats for me. I think the kid's a winner. He keeps him out of bad plays. He keeps plays alive, avoiding sacks. He's only got thrown one interception the entire year. I mean, that year you can keep all the stats in the big games. I mean, what's his winning percentage? I mean, the guy just wins games. So, you know, even though they'll have the injury, they still won't have Anthony Jennings and you know, a couple other guys that they had lost, Sean Dion Hamilton from earlier in the year. I don't think Alabama's going to be good enough and healthy enough to play well enough on the line of scrimmage and have Jalen Hurts make enough plays to where Alabama can win this game. But I think it's close. I don't think Saban never loses to any of his former assistants. He's 11-0, so it's going to be a blowout like the other ones. I don't think so. I think it's going to be very close to that point spread. In fact, that's what I have it as, 24-20 Alabama.
By the way, not only is he 11-0 against him, he's beat them all by at least two touchdowns.
Yep.
They have not been close. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk about that and a lot more with Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. I want to talk to you about weight loss management. It's an ever-increasing field that is full of empty promises, a lot of yo-yo dieting, and dangerous diet supplements, right? We've all been there, especially this time of year when we all make the resolution, hey, let's pick things up, need to lose some weight. I think we've all been there as adults. But at Cool Springs MD, they provide a safe and effective weight management solution with the support of a physician, Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, board-certified physician, his wife, Daphne Lodge, who is the registered nurse. They have been helping Middle Tennessee become healthier and happier for over 20 years. Every individual is treated differently. And their professional staff at Cool Springs MD, they're passionate about giving each one of you the one-on-one attention that you deserve. Take a tour of their facility today. Go meet their on-site trainers and counselors and learn more about weight loss management. Find out their options and how to achieve a healthy lifestyle by calling Cool Springs MD today for an appointment. Here's the number, 615-660-6900. That's 615-660-6900. Or visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, joins us every Monday at this time, starting at noon. I did have to give a chuckle, Vince, because I saw that Derek Dooley has left the Dallas Cowboys. He's going back to college, and he's coming back to the SEC. Dun, dun, dun. Where is he? Where did he land? Where did he go? Let me ask Willie before I get you to talk about that. Willie, did you see that Derek Dooley is back in the SEC?
I did not. Is he at Georgia?
Is he at Georgia? Chase?
No.
Hold on, hold on.
Oh,
there's
sorry.
A gong. Okay. Try again.
Is he at Texas A&M?
Damn! Keep going.
Is he at Arkansas? I don't know.
Okay. I was waiting for you to wave the white flag.
I'm waving the white flag.
He has joined whom at where, Vince? I'll let you do the honors.
Barry Odom at Missouri as offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach.
He replaces Josh Heupel, who left to replace Scott Frost at UCF after UCF had their big parade. Did you guys carry it live at WNML? They had their national championship parade over the weekend.
No, you know, it was close to making the cut, but just on the outside.
Yeah.
They had that, and the Browns had an 0-16 parade, so quite a weekend.
They did. Yeah. Actually, I saw some great signs in Cleveland over the weekend talking about participation trophies they were handing out to the Browns. But Derek Dooley will be the new OC and quarterbacks coach at Missouri.
OC, wow, that's interesting.
Well, he's never been a coordinator. He's been a head coach, but he's never been a coordinator calling plays. So, which made him a head scratching one of the reasons why he was a many reasons why he was a head scratching hire at Tennessee in the first place as head coach is he hadn't even been a coordinator. So he's been a head coach. Now he went back to position coach in the NFL. He wasn't brought back by the Cowboys. And now he's suddenly going to call plays in your offense when he really hadn't done that type of offense. Why would Barry Odom hitch his not only his wagon but his career on Derek Dooley? Because when this fails, then he will fail, and not only will he be back on the hot seat, he'll be gone. It's just there's nothing you can point to make you feel like this is going to work. And I don't know why he would think this would be the solution when you have an SEC OC and quarterback coach position that's your best option. If your hire, one, is released late afternoon on a Friday, that tells you, you know, you're going to get criticized. Two, if it draws a whole bunch of crying, laughing emojis from everyone that's known him, including Tennessee fans, you know that's not a good thing either. So it was bizarre, and it is really risky for Barry Odom in Missouri.
All right, let's talk about the Vols players who have declared for the NFL draft. Let's go over the list and just kind of give me your thoughts. Expected? Were you surprised? And just let's talk about it and the effects that it'll have on this team moving forward.
Well, it started out with John Kelly. That's something that we've talked about was expected. He's anywhere from probably in the third and fourth round range, somewhere in there. His combine and the way he times will certainly be important for him. Rashawn Golden was more of a 50-50, I think. He's a versatile DB. I think he was used at the nickel a lot, which is a desired spot in the NFL. But in the NFL, it's a very physical spot position, and he is still pretty thin. He still needs to bulk up. He's a 195, about 6'1", so he's a little bit longer. I think he would have potentially fit as an outside corner under Jeremy Pruitt because Jeremy Pruitt likes those bigger, longer corners in their defense. And so I was curious to see how he would work in that defense, but he wants to move on, and I think maybe mid to late round potentially for him. But because of his versatility, it could allow him to increase his value. And then the surprise happened last night where Khalil McKenzie, defensive tackle, announced that he was going to the NFL, declared for the NFL draft. And he's another guy that has been there an awful lot but has not really played up to anyone's expectations of being a five-star coming in. He only started 9 games at Tennessee and only had 3.5 sacks and tackles for loss. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of numbers. 31 games played, 9 career starts in 3 years, and injuries and weight and all that. I just don't think he was the dominant force that you would expect a guy declaring for the NFL draft would.
Vince, all last season tell me, and they were adamant about it, that they felt like Butch Jones and that staff had him playing on the wrong side of the ball. I mean, they told me that all season, like Khalil McKenzie is on the wrong side of the ball. He should be over as an offensive lineman, not a defensive lineman.
Too late now, though.
No, I know. I'm just saying. They were telling me that all last year. Like, they were, it was a head-scratcher for them. Why he felt like he was out of position. He was at the wrong side of the ball.
Well, and we've heard the potential, the questions about whether they would move him to offense too for a while, because there definitely were people that thought he would, his demeanor would fit a little bit more on the offensive side. He's such a nice, engaging kid. I just don't think he has the nasty that a lot of those guys need to have, and the aggressiveness and or the physical explosiveness. So, yeah, he may have not played the right position at Tennessee, but he can't do anything about it now. And I just think because of, you know, of the relationships with the McKenzie family and the front office with the Raiders, and the just being having that kind of family lineage, I think there's going to be plenty of teams that are going to be intrigued by him and maybe think that he wasn't used correctly at Tennessee and try to make something out of him. He's a big body, so big bodies will get opportunities. I don't know where that'll fall in the draft, but I think it would have been interesting to see him work as that nose guard in Jeremy Pruitt's 3-4 and let him develop another year, and then you can take advantage of the connections and the relationships after a year. So it's not something that I think a lot of people would have recommended for him, but hey, if he can get a spot, then go for it.
You know, last year we did a lot of talking about, because Butch Jones couldn't stop talking about his strength and conditioning coach, Rock Gullickson. It was, I mean, my goodness, it was the greatest hire ever in UT football history. Rock Gullickson is gone. Where have they gone on that side with the strength and conditioning coach? They've made a couple other hires on that staff. Tell us about it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. They've with the strength and conditioning, they've actually gone back to the NFL and hired Craig Fitzgerald from the Houston Texans. And, of course, Tennessee has not made this official yet. This was a report from a Houston paper and a number of reporters in Houston. You know, the first thing, I got to be honest with you, the first thing I thought of when I heard the strength and conditioning coach of the Houston Texans was, well, they've had a ton of injuries, especially to their star players. Isn't that what Tennessee's had? So, now, there may not be any correlation with the strength and conditioning coach, but I know we've taken hundreds of calls about, you know, well, why does all Tennessee's players get injured all the time in the last few years? What about the strength and conditioning? Why can't we get someone in here the players don't get hurt working with? Maybe there's a correlation, maybe there's not. But that, honestly, that's the first thing I thought of. And he's had that SEC experience. It was at Penn State. And I just think the NFL is a different animal. You have to – there's so much more to being a strength and conditioning coach in college, where you're around them for so long in the summer when the coaches are really limited in the off season, and they have so much more in their lives they have to balance that you have to be aware of and help them with. And it's more than just staying on professionals who are going to be in the weight room anyway. I just think it's a much different game. So maybe they were limited in what their options were, or Jeremy Pruitt may have a relationship with him. He did have a relationship with another guy that they hired, Drew Hughes from Florida, as director of player personnel. You know, fans immediately think, oh, we stole a guy from Florida. That brings them down and helps us. I mean, how many of us know the day-to-day of director of player personnel? Yeah, maybe he's done a nice job, maybe he has not. And then it was interesting on Twitter, Tino Sunseri, the former Pitt quarterback, and yes, that Sunseri, the son of Sal, the former DC, he announced on Twitter that he was joining Jeremy Pruitt's staff. I don't know what role. There's still a couple of spots open on the coaching staff, but probably going to be sort of a GA type of role, I would imagine. But I think that was interesting. Maybe not met with the same sort of warm welcome as the other ones.
All right, last thing, and then we'll finish up with the national championship game. I know they got to commit at the Army All-American game. How do you see all this, you know, what we know? And one, tell us about this. I guess he was a linebacker, four-star commit that committed to them at the Army All-American game. Tell us about him and just overall right now, as we sit here, still National Signing Day in February, but just the early signing period, what do you think?
Well, the player is J.J. Peterson. He's from Colquitt County in Moultrie, Georgia. Has a couple of his former high school teammates on the Tennessee roster right now. Sean Schamberger, the cornerback, and Jaquan Blakely, who was a linebacker, moved to defensive end and is likely going back to linebacker in Jeremy Pruitt's 3-4 defense. And he wanted to play with him. You know, spoke highly of Jeremy Pruitt, but wanted to play with his former teammates. His coach there is Rush Probst, who, of course, goes back to the Hoover High School movie and everything with Jeremy Pruitt, where he started his coaching career. And so that's where those guys go back, and the connection and the relationships with them. And even Rush Probst has been mentioned as a possible addition to Jeremy Pruitt's staff, and who knows, maybe that still happens. But he's an explosive player, had at least one official tackle for loss in that Army All-American game on Saturday. And he's a guy that is one of those, they phrased as a tone setter, where he said he wanted to get the recruiting process over with because he was tired of coaches calling while he's trying to be he's in workout sessions. He's like, man, they're interrupting my workouts. I'm trying to get work done here. And I think Tennessee is void of those type of guys. I think they need more of those type of guys where they're tone setters and they're guys that are about putting in the work, but putting in the work for the team. So it sounds like this kid has the makeup that they're looking for and they need more of. Similar to head coach. Your head coach, not about the glitz and the glamour and all that, just about getting the work done. So I could see where those two would be a nice fit. Now, where is it the rest of the way? Well, they still have technically three players committed to them right now. A lot of the recruiting services list four, but one of them has said that his high school coach has said that Tennessee pulled an offer. So they still got at least three guys that are committed right now. Two of them are iffy on whether they will be signed by this coaching staff. And then there's plenty of others, 15 to 20 guys that Tennessee is still after. Number of them four-star guys that are going to visit in these last couple weekends. So as soon as Jeremy Pruitt and Kevin Shearer are done tonight, then it's all into getting kids in the next three weekends. And we'll see how they close. But getting a lot of those four-stars and need position guys on campus is going to be huge and could set the tone for them to be able to set the table for them to be able to close strong, where they still have, I think, in terms of guys they can sign on February 7th, still have about 10 spots right now. So there's a lot more work to be done. But this kid, J.J. Peterson, who announced during the Army All-American game, is a nice first piece.
Well, we'll see. Of course, with Coach Pruitt on the spotlight tonight with that Alabama defense, did you guys see the story of how expensive the resale of tickets are for that game? Of course, it doesn't surprise us at all, but just seeing the number was eye-popping. Did you guys see it?
I did not see it, but again, as you mentioned, it's not surprising being in Atlanta.
All right. All right, so Darren, did you see the story?
No.
Okay, take a guess on the average ticket price on StubHub or some of these other services that resell people's tickets. What do you think the average ticket price is for a ticket tonight?
Average?
Yeah.
I'm going to say average $1,400.
$1,400. That would be close to what it was last year. $1,391 was the average for last year. Last year was the highest, well, actually since 2013, where it was $1,600. Then there was quite a dip. It was under $1,000 on average in 14, 15, and 16.
I'm surprised because Georgia is in it, because I figured it would be high because Georgia's in it.
Well, it is. So this year it's $2,300.
Oh, wow.
So by far the highest ever. Of course, with the two teams in close proximity with their fan bases. Now, I'm sure the hotels downtown in Atlanta probably are not what they have been for some national title games because so many people are within driving distance. But just trying to get into the game, the demand is unbelievable. $2,300 per ticket. That's amazing.
Everything I've seen is Georgia will have more fans in there than Alabama.
I'm really curious to see what that looks like tonight. If it's 50-50, if it's an edge to Georgia.
Oh, I've heard how hungry Georgia is. 65-35, 70-30 is what I've heard. Wow. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's what I've been seeing when I've been looking at this, because I was curious too. Is it going to be 50-50? It's going to feel like the game down in Jacksonville between Georgia and Florida. No, everything I've read, it sounds like it's going to be pretty decisive Georgia over Alabama, which, you know, I understand they're in that state, but, you know, Alabama does kind of travel well.
And it's not that far.
The thing is I don't think tonight's atmosphere is going to be like you see some NFL, some Super Bowls, where it's really corporate. I don't think it's going to be that way, which will make it even more fun.
Oh, yeah.
And I also wonder what the national – and what will the national ratings be with the all-SEC final in places like California or New York or Chicago, where you remove – you don't have anybody from the region. I'm just curious with an all-SEC final – how the national ratings look, but I think a great game could go a long way.
So your pick officially was Alabama by 4? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, 24-20. I just love their mirror images of one another, and the adjustments that they make are as good as it gets in all of college football. So what happens early on in the game will be, I think, different than what happens in the second half. A lot of running the football. I just think it's going to be much closer to the Sugar Bowl last week than the Rose Bowl. I don't know that you're going to see Georgia. I know you're not going to see Georgia put up the points like that and be in an offensive game. I think it'll be closer to the 20s type of game like we saw in the Sugar Bowl.
Good stuff as always. Enjoy it. Have a great week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
Certainly will. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great week.
Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Speaking of ratings, I've got the ratings from the wild card weekend. We'll tell you, were they up, were they down, were they the same? We'll do that next on 3D 102.5 The Game. At 125, we'll head down to Atlanta. We'll bring in Chris Tomino, 680 The Fan down there. We'll talk about the national championship game tonight at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium and talk about the Falcons win. They move on. They're now the favorite in Philadelphia. So we'll cover a lot of ground with Chris Tomino, who's always really good, coming up at 125. Now, I asked you during the break, do you believe the ratings for Wild Card Weekend were up, down, or the same? Your answer. By the way, have you seen this? Do you know the answer?
I do not.
Okay.
I don't either.
So you had the Titans and Chiefs, of course, ABC and ESPN. So simulcast of those two. Falcons-Rams was Saturday night on NBC. Sunday, Bills-Jags, CBS. Packers or Panthers-Saints was on Fox. So all nationally televised. ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox. What do you think? Were the ratings up, down, or stayed the same from last year?
I'm going to say down. Because we didn't have any of those marquee teams. Dallas, no Pittsburgh, no Green Bay. So I'm going to say overall slightly down.
Okay. Chase?
That's what I was going to go with, because you didn't really have a true sexy matchup outside of maybe the Panthers and Saints, and then the Rams being back for the first time in a long time.
But they're in L.A.
They are in L.A.
It's an L.A. market.
Yeah. I still go with down.
It's the second largest market in the country.
I'm still going to say down.
Falcons, Atlanta, that's a big market. All right, you guys both locking in down?
Yep,
down.
We've talked about ratings a lot on this show. Well, let's start with the Titans and Chiefs to kick off Wild Card Weekend. Last year, it was the Texans and the Raiders. Down 11% from that game. Titans-Chiefs nationally was a 14-7. Last year, the Texans and Raiders was a 16-6. So down 11% from last year's game.
And they're calling that a combined number since it was on both networks?
Yes. Falcons-Rams. Last year, it was the Lions and the Seahawks. NBC, that game, Falcons-Rams, down 10% from Lions-Seahawks, which, quite honestly, a little surprised. I know Seattle's got a big following, but those are Atlanta, L.A., that's two bigger markets. Way bigger
markets. That's
interesting. Yeah. Down 10%. So then you had Bills, Jags on Sunday on CBS. Last year it was the Steelers and the Dolphins kicking off Sunday. Jags, Bills, which was deathly dull. Believe it or not, I thought it would be worse. Only down 10% from last year's Steelers, Dolphins.
Wow.
It was a, I think Bills, Jags was a 17-2. So down 10% from last year's Steelers, Dolphins. And then the final game was Saints, Panthers on Fox. Last year's game was Giants, Packers. And that game this year was down 15%.
Wow. So 10 to 15% seems to be the theme.
Well, yes. New York, largest market, mm-hmm. Packers, huge fan base.
But
we,
I mean across the board.
We sort of saw that coming,
Carolina,
right?
New Orleans. That was a pretty easy one to see.
Right.
But as it was unfolding and it looked, you know, with Aaron Rodgers' injury and the Giants were dipping, you knew they weren't in the mix. Dallas wasn't going to make it. The Seahawks, who have been there every year, out of there. I think they knew the writing was on the wall. I don't know if it's going to get a whole lot better. It will get better with the Patriots and the Steelers playing this coming weekend. But with the newcomers in the NFC, too, I mean, your big marquee teams are the Eagles with an injured quarterback and the Vikings, who aren't really a sexy team nationally. I don't know if it's going to be a great year for ratings.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the peak and the comeback in the second half where things got better, it was going to be down a lot more in the Panthers-Saints game as compared to last year's Giants-Packers. It was way worse, but the comeback helped because more people started tuning in and started peeking out. Their numbers got a lot better as Carolina was actually pushing to try to even win that game, where there was a time early second half it looked like the Saints – we're going to pull away, and that wasn't the case. If it wasn't for that spike, it was going to be a lot worse, but still down 15%. So, yes, basically 10 to 15% down from last year's games. And it continues to be the theme that we've talked about a lot on the show. NFL ratings, while they're still the king of the hill, they keep going the wrong way. Now, you do wonder, okay, so will this weekend, as you just brought up, will it be down from last year?
I think they will. I think they'll be better than they were this past week because you've got the Steelers and the Patriots playing, which will help. But I just think this year is going to fall short of what the norm has been. And I think the trend is going in the other direction. I just think that they cycled so high here recently. It was just due for a down cycle. And so I'm really curious what it's going to look like the next 2 or 3 years. That's really going to be the key. If you have one down year, that's not a big deal. But this will be 2 years in a row, right, since it really peaked. And so which way will it trend next year and the year after? That's when you would have a problem.
Okay, I want you to do this, Willie, because we're going to come back the first segment of the fourth and final hour. We're going to get the Titans fans involved. And I want you, because we've talked a lot about the win, moving forward now the divisional round, what's one thing you want to hear from a Titans fan coming out to kick off the fourth and final hour? We've covered a lot of ground on today's show, but what's something you want to hear from the fans to kick off the fourth hour? I'm putting you on the spot.
What do I want to hear from the Titans fans?
Yeah. Like, what do you want to hear from them? What do you want to discuss to kick off the fourth? Because we're going to do a segment of phone calls. When we come back, we'll do Chris Tomino at 125. We'll talk a little bit more about the national championship game down in Atlanta. But what do you want to hear from the Titans fans?
Okay. I want to hear, what do you think they have a chance against the Patriots. Because 14-point dogs, that doesn't happen very often. Remember last year, there's been a handful of big underdogs, right, in the divisional round over the last few years.
It's very, very rare to see a 2-touchdown underdog this deep in the NFL playoffs. In fact, I'd love to know the research. When's the last time we had something like that?
Correct me if I'm wrong. It was Houston last year that played the Patriots in the divisional round, and they were a huge underdog,
yeah,
weren't
that's
they?
A good
17,
point.
Maybe.
I think that's
because Savage was playing, or whoever it was. They had a big quarterback issue, but this is right up there. But I do feel like the Titans are sneaky from a national perspective. If they can put another effort like that on offense together, I think they could make this interesting. I think there's a lot more hope for them than I felt like the Texans did last year when they went into New England. And then, of course, there's the question of, is this Patriots team at all more vulnerable than last year's team? Because statistically, their defense isn't very good. They have the number one offense. And then, of course, there's the X factor of that huge article by Seth Wickersham. Well, does that say maybe there's chinks in the armor, or are they going to galvanize around that article and say, well, we're going to show you we're the Patriots?
All right, we want to know what your feelings are. As we sit here on this Monday, 2 days after a huge upset in Kansas City, Titans come back down 18.5, beat the Chiefs. How do you feel going into this game? Do you feel good? You nervous? What are your thoughts? Will, you'll kick it off. 737-1025. We'll get your phone calls to kick off the fourth and final hour of 3D on this Monday. That's next.